Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome to Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck.
Once again, the iconic voice of Esther Lynn welcomes you to a brand new edition of Between the Links. Thank you for watching and listening. And man, oh man, am I excited for this matchup, ladies and gentlemen. Because I woke up, we had one matchup, and then by the time I dropped my son off at school, both competitors were out of it. So I had to reach. I reached out to a lot of different people, and finally, we got maybe an even better matchup this time around. Should be a good one. Coming off another busy week in MMA. We had Bellator 249. We had UFC Fight Island 6. This weekend, of course, UFC 254. Lot to talk about as usual. So let's get into this great matchup. Another, I guess, number one contender battle of wills, but we'll see what happens here. First, the multi-time champ from the past, the panelist, joins us once again. It's been a minute since we've had takes this fiery. On the panel from MMAfighting.com, Mr. Jen Meshew, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Mike, I need you to tell the whole story, though. You're a journalist. You owe it to the fans to tell them what happened. You had people drop out, and then you had me step up, step in, and everybody is ducking me. Nobody wanted a part of this, except for, of course, the gentleman you're about to introduce. So full credit to him. It was a foolish decision that he has made. But I respect him for coming to take his licks because he's going up against the GOAT, the greatest of all time, the greatest BTL competitor ever. So well done, Aaron. Well done.
Interesting that you say that because many remember his first appearance pre-MMA fighting on the show as one of the greatest of all time as he returns to the panel this week. And let me just throw this out there. This is a man that I still hear about from time to time from the viewers because many people believe he got the big fat hose job from Casey Lydon and myself when he faced Jose Young several shows ago. We're going all the way back to BTL episode number 3, but he's back from TSN, one of the best in the business, Mr. Aaron Bronsetter. Aaron, welcome back, my friend.
I'm happy to be back, and you are right. That was a nonsense judgment. I hate to say that about Casey. He's a good man. I'm going to pull a Stephen A. Smith here. He's a good man. He's a nice man. He's a good husband. However, I definitely won that last one. And I'm here to get it back. Unfortunately, Jed is an easy mark. And when you told me it was him, I was happy to jump in. Although I'm sorry, maybe the better guests will come back next week. Mike, I'm sorry they bailed on you and you had to deal with the leftovers.
These are pretty darn good leftovers. Like turkey, it's like Thanksgiving, but like 9 yeah. o'clock at night. You want to eat some turkey sandwiches. And I think that's what we got here. Some good leftovers.
The leftovers are better than the original dish.
Hey, throw it into a sandwich. Pretty obvious. 100%.
Yeah, the stuffing, the cranberry sauce, all between two pieces of bread. That's what we got here. Between the bread, between the links. But let's put a bow on UFC Fight Island 6 because we have a lot to get into. Brian Ortega returns from a nearly two-year layoff. He defeats and dominates the Korean Zombie. Very impressive stuff. We're going to talk more about him in a moment, I'm sure. But let's discuss the other stars of the event in Abu Dhabi, a la NHL-style Jed Meshew. Outside of Mr. Ortega, who are your three stars from UFC Fight Island 6 and why?
I mean, Mr. Ortega is obviously the first choice, but outside of him, we still had a couple of good showings on this card, I suppose. Let's not say that this card coming in was the most hyped, but we did end up getting some really good performances. I mean, kicked off, Saeed Nurmagomedov. I mean, one, 40 seconds KO, something 41. I'm not sure the exact time. Sub 1 minute KO. I know it was against a change of opponent last minute. Overmatched, all those things. But, I mean, that hasn't stopped us from being super hyped about Khamzat Chimaev, that he was blowing the doors off outmatched opposition. So why should we be any less excited about a man whose last name is Nurmagomedov? We shouldn't. We should be super pumped about this kid to see what he can do in the world's premier organization. He's obviously going to get a push with a last name like that. And if he has performances like that, then sky's the limit for him. I guess you're making me do three. The second one is just probably the number one as far as actual name brand to come out of this. And that's Jessica Andrade. I mean, she is a former champion, kind of the boogeywoman of her division, except for the fact that the new champion is just awesome. But Andrade has been in the game for a long time and done things that most women aren't capable of doing from a power, from a KO perspective. Bumps up at 125 against a former title challenger and handles business in classic body-punching fashion. I mean, automatic new contender, new blood, which is super necessary right now because Valentina Shevchenko is obviously the best fighter in the sport compared to her peers. And so this is at least an interesting challenger for her. For the third one, I'm going to throw you a curveball here because I know we've got some other obvious ones here. You know, I'm sure Aaron will go with Jimmy Crute just because light heavyweight needs help desperately and he turned in a good showing. But let's have a little more fun with it. Let's go Junyoung Park. Anytime you're posting 30-25 scorecards, that's just a good effort. You know, this guy is a guy who's a striker by nature, comes out, shows off his grappling chops. I know John Phillips isn't very good I was going to couch it, but nope, he's not very good, which is partly why we should be a little less pumped on Khamzat Chimaev. But Junyoung Park, you know, this guy's not a grappler, and he showed a lot of proficiency on the ground here, going away from his preferred style in general. So give me that for a curveball and to add a little interest here.
Aaron, what do you think? Who are your three stars outside of Brian Ortega?
Well, I have to agree with Jed on one of them, and that's going to be Jessica Andrade. I mean, Jessica Andrade is really the only intriguing contender now at flyweight. She was before this fight. I mean, flyweight is just, unfortunately, a bit of a dog's breakfast when it comes to the contenders. And I hate to say that. I know Lauren Murphy, if you're watching, I apologize. I think that Lauren Murphy is very talented, and had her opponent not dropped off, she could have made a case. But I think that in this situation, with Jessica Andrade coming in, beating the number one contender by stoppage in the first round, I mean, she shut Caitlin Chookagian's entire system down with that liver shot. I think you have to give her one of the stars of the night. I mean, I don't think there's much of a question there.
Lauren Murphy, I don't apologize. I don't want you to get the next shot. Give it to Jessica Andrade, and I feel no shame in saying that.
Well, you're not a gentleman. So let me continue instead of interrupting me. Guram Kutataladze is my second star. This is a guy who goes to Vegas with Khamzat Chimaev, basically just a lobby for himself to get an opportunity, ends up getting one on short notice and beats Matush Gamrot, who's one of the biggest European prospects to come into the UFC in a long time, was two-division champion in KSW. Kutataladze beats him. I think a lot of people thought that he did beat him, and then he goes on the mic and says that this is BS and that he shouldn't have won the fight and that his opponent should have won. So he's a star in two capacities because, A, you can make a case he did win that fight, and B, he didn't think he won it and said, listen, he should have won. But He takes it on short notice, comes in, puts on a great performance. So I have to give it to Kutataladze. And then finally, I'm going to vote for Pedro. I think Jonathan Martinez looks fantastic against Thomas Almeida. Almeida coming back after a 33-month layoff. You don't know how he's going to look. Ends up taking the fight at featherweight because Martinez had a bad weight cut last time when he took a short notice bantamweight fight. This one bumps up to 145, and everybody knows how vicious Thomas Almeida is. He was completely neutralized. This was a total no-brainer for the judges. 30-27 across the board. Martinez has put in two great performances as of late during this pandemic era, coming off of that really bad decision robbery back in February. So I just think he's a real up-and-comer. And you look at him at Factory X, and they're putting in some real great work there. I think that he's somebody to watch in this division. Not featherweight, of course, bantamweight, when he fights at his natural weight class next time around. But this is somebody who's really refined his skills, looked really good, and came back after what I thought was a real robbery earlier in the year.
Mike, just so we're clear, I am now fully expecting at the end of this, when Casey jobs me out of my right and true victory, for Aaron to come out and admit that I am the better man and the victor so he can get the star bump that he was just talking about with Kutaladze.
It's a rigged election. It's a rigged election before it happens.
Putting it out there right now. When that inevitably happens, I expect Aaron to say the truth, because he apparently values that. And you know me, I have never placed a premium on the truth.
This is a rigged witch hunt. I agree with him.
I like all of your picks. I actually, kind of in the aftermath, I think James Crouch could probably be right up there too, because man, did he jump on an opportunity to start busting on Joaquin Buckley, the talk of the town the week before. And everyone's been talking about that. And the video views and the page views for James Krause are higher than a lot of these guys, which is interesting. And he won a fight on one leg, which is nice. But
that helps.
I love the Krause thing. I love it because there's the potential that this entire beef is fake and started by a fake Twitter account. And if that's true, it's going to make me really
Apparently
happy.
It's not. I don't think it's digging. Apparently Buckley used to talk smack on Facebook and send people Facebook Messenger messages all the time. And apparently Krause took exception to something that happened like before he was even in the UFC. It's like, who's this Bellator guy harassing me on Facebook? So I was surprised too, because this is a very quiet guy, Joaquin Buckley. He seems like a very quiet, humble guy. But apparently the braggadocio travels over to Facebook for him.
I remember I was talking to Kevin Holland before his fight with Darren Stewart, and he said that Buckley pissed him off so bad that his grandfather actually made him a COVID mask with Holland smacking Buckley across the face. And I asked him like what he said to Holland that made him so upset. And he goes, I'll have to tell you another time. Like, I'm never going to say this during an interview. So apparently Buckley can ruffle some feathers. But you know, Aaron, I do want to talk about Brian Ortega. I do want to talk about Andrade, but you guys already did that for me. But Ortega looked outstanding. I was surprised to see him outstrike Zombie for 25 minutes, but he did. And now it looks, unless something just outlandish happens, he's next for Alexander Volkanovski in a shot at the featherweight title. So I'm curious, because this is one of the questions I had since Saturday, Aaron. From a business standpoint, from planting those seeds to get this division moving again, was this result the best case scenario for the UFC, for Volkanovski, for everybody involved here?
I think from a business standpoint, Zombie would have been a better result for them. Zombie's got this massive following. That being said, Ortega did put on such a masterclass in that fight. And going into this fight, I said, why are people sleeping on Ortega suddenly? Like, he had one bad performance against Holloway. He's had 2 years off, changed his team completely. Like, we already knew how good this guy was. Not to mention that Zombie at the highest level has never been a huge performer. You know, we saw that thing against Yair Rodriguez. He was winning that fight for the most part, but a lot of the times he's lost fights that he should have won in the past. And there have been times where he gets to a certain level and he can't get it done. Now, we did get to a championship fight against Jose Aldo, dislocated shoulder, very unfortunate result. But I do think that Brian Ortega showed that he was an elite fighter prior to that fight against Holloway, got injured, had to rehab, had to basically do it all again and put himself back into shape and put himself back together again. And he did so. And, you know, people were talking about the layoff, but look at his opponent, the Korean Zombie, goes and does military duty for 3.5 years, comes back and doesn't miss a beat against Dennis Bermudez. So I think that layoffs can be treated differently for people. A lot of his layoff was rehabbing, so he wouldn't have been training, but he tore his camp down, built it back up. And now look what we have with Brian Ortega. I think that his performance is something that's going to be a lot more marketable this time around.
What do you think, Jed?
Yeah, I disagree with just everything Aaron said right there. I mean, there was a lot of really good reasons to doubt Brian Ortega going to this. The first being, Brian Ortega is bad at fighting. And I know that that's a controversial opinion, but it's one I've had for a really long time. And it's one that I'm going to keep saying all the way up until he wins the title, taps out Khabib and wins the lightweight title and gets inducted into the Hall of Fame as the greatest of all time. Because in all of the career that we have seen him compete in, he has lost every second of every fight up until he won them. And there's certainly something to be said for that, for his kind of predatory finishing ability. But I mean, go back and look at his career. Like, he was just losing to everybody he fought, and then he wins. Then he wins. He gets the KO. He gets the submission. The only person he didn't pull it out on was Max Holloway. So there's not a lot of tape of Brian Ortega beating people up inside the cage for protracted periods, except for this past weekend, obviously. I mean, you got to take your hat off to him. Can't say anything bad about that performance. But I mean, heading into the performance, Brian Ortega he took the 2-year layoff. He did not hold a win over a single currently ranked opponent, like a currently ranked featherweight. Like, I think there's a real justifiable argument that even beating Zombie, Ortega doesn't deserve a title shot at this point. He has one top 15 ranked win right now. Like, there's, I know that that's an incredible win, and I'm not going to buck about him getting a shot against Volkanovski, but he has not done a lot in the context of this division. I mean, in the time since he has picked up wins, that big gap, Volkanovski basically put together his entire run in the UFC. So a lot of reasons to doubt him. Good for him. He showed us that, you know, those doubts were misplaced. And, you know, I think beating Zombie, I can disagree more with Zombie not performing on the biggest stage. I mean, this man has had a career that stretches forever. If you're going to knock him for getting knocked out by Yair Rodriguez with arguably the greatest KO of all time, like just an insane Hail Mary that gets him. Not for me, man. I think Zombie's the man. I would have loved to see Zombie fight Volkanovski. I wish they had set that fight up regardless. You know, I don't think Zombie needed another win to get in there, and now I don't think he ever will. But, I mean, I guess Volkanovski Ortega's going to be okay, and I think it's probably fine. I don't think you're getting a big difference from a marketing standpoint either way here. But really, they have the best fight they can get for him. The UFC just won't do it. It's Henry Cejudo. That's the fight that should be made from a business perspective. But nobody wants to talk about quadruple C. Nobody wants to do it.
Jed, I mean, I was going to cut you off, but I figured I'd just let you continue to talk because you're just backing yourself into a total corner. You know, at no point in that rambling, incoherent response, you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. You know, everybody in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. And I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
Man, I really appreciate the Billy Madison reference, but we're old, so it's cool. A lot of the new people listening to this probably don't know what's going on there because that movie's like 30 years old. So
I'm a young man. I don't even know who Billy Madison is.
It's a great movie.
I should look it up. Okay, cool. Yeah,
it's a great movie. And the fact that you didn't know that. No, I'm just kidding. That was excellent use of the principle in the quote. And when you have a matchup and a round that close, you're going to lean towards creativity. So Aaron is on the board with the first point of the matchup. But I'm going to lean towards
creativity of the man who quoted a film. What?
Well, the idea to quote the film is where the creativity stems from, Jed.
I don't think it's
creative. You're working backwards. You're working in reverse, Jed. You're working in reverse. You got to work in
creative plagiarism. How about that?
If plagiarism is creative, then I have a bone to pick with some of my law school professors.
See, there's reasons for all this. Now Jed's fired up. Now Jed's got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and that means
look, I already called what's going to happen. We all know what's going to happen. I'm going to get robbed on the
rigged witch hunt. I got it. Rigged witch hunt.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury. Not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Well, all right, well, let's move ahead to Saturday because UFC 254 is going down. I feel like we've been waiting for this event the entire Fight Island trip and even before that. Habib versus Justin Gaethje, the main event for the undisputed 155-pound strap. this doesn't need much more of a build from us because the fight is amazing. And I have to say, Aaron, just hearing the opinions of a lot of the fighters that I've spoken with over the last few weeks, there are a lot of them who feel that Justin Gaethje is going to do what no other man has done before, and that is beat Khabib Nurmagomedov in the octagon or in any ring or cage on Saturday night. So it got me to thinking, since I haven't heard things this one-sided against Khabib in a long, long time, maybe ever, is this the greatest lightweight title fight of all time, at least on paper?
I think from an X's and O's standpoint, you can make the case. But I just don't think that it has the same allure as Khabib versus Conor. I mean, that was such a long time in the making. You look at the promotional materials that had come about from basically a year of promoting this fight. He was coming off of the Mayweather boxing match. Like, there was no bigger star than Conor McGregor. His star could not have gotten higher than it was after that boxing match. And then he goes in, faces Khabib after that whole situation with the trolley being, or the dolly rather, being thrown through the window. You had that whole buildup, him flying all the way to Brooklyn to confront Khabib and his team. I think that if we're talking about the greatest, listen, from an X's and O's standpoint, I certainly think that Gaethje poses a lot of problems, but it's not different than the Khabib fights where they say, well, what happens when this happens? How's Khabib going to deal with this? How's Khabib going to deal with Conor's power striking? You know, the fight starts standing. How's Khabib going to deal with Tony Ferguson on the mat? If Tony Ferguson's throwing up submissions, how's Khabib going to deal with Ally Aquinto? He's not going to be able to take down. How's Khabib going to deal with this, this, that, and that? He deals with it all the time. And he always ends up coming out on top. And he barely loses any rounds. He lost one round in his entire UFC career officially. So people always are trying to come up with ways for people to beat Khabib. Well, let's see it. I mean, from an X and O standpoint, on paper, I sure think that Justin Gaethje poses a lot of problems for him. I don't think this is going to be a walk in the park for Khabib, but it could be. I mean, it's been a walk in the park for him in the past. So let's see what happens. In terms of when you're talking about the greatest, I just think the fanfare that was surrounding UFC 229 is what makes that the greatest lightweight fight of all time. Look at the buy rate. Look at the gate for that particular event. It was just a big ticket event. I think that from an X and O standpoint, right now, it seems like it can be a fight where Khabib can be, you know, handles a lot of problems. And hey, Gaethje could win the fight. Who knows? But I think that we need to look at this realistically and say that until we see somebody do something to Khabib outside of maybe winning a round, that we should probably just go with what we know. And what we know is that that was a super fight between him and Conor McGregor, and possibly the biggest fight in UFC history.
Jed, what do you think? Because I understand where Aaron's coming from. But I think there is a difference between biggest and greatest. Like biggest, like Conor and Khabib, there's just no doubt about it. That is the biggest 55-pound title fight of all time. Nothing's even going to touch that, no matter what happens on Saturday. But as far as like the greatest title fight matchups, is this it?
So I agree with you in that there is a difference between biggest and greatest. But no, this isn't it. And I do agree with Aaron that it's still Conor Khabib. I mean, part of what goes into the greatest, and the issue with this question here really is Khabib is in one fight. He's fought one fight. He's just fought it 28, soon to be 29 times. There is no difference in what happens. That is part of the uniqueness of him. The fight is always one question. Can you stop the takedowns or not? If you can't, you're going to lose, and 29 people have lost. Gleison Tibau, who is a house on legs, is the only person who was able to kind of, you know, to stop that, and then he still lost anyway. But moving forward and in perpetuity, Khabib is not going to win kickboxing matches against anybody. He can win rounds or time, but he's not going to win them. So by that measure, I don't think Gaethje has a chance here. I know that that probably makes me a little bit of an outsider in that view. I think Khabib is going to run through him with little to no effort. It will look similar to Poirier and McGregor. He is just going to beat the brakes off him because he's the best fighter we've ever seen. And that is what it is. And so I don't consider this fight that great because it lives with the same contours that the Conor Khabib fight did. And I do think that those contours are great. There is, you know, striker versus grappler is the classic matchup. And so there's a lot to build off from there. But everything else about this is just less interesting than the Conor fight. So you get a little bit more because people want to believe the wrestling background is going to give Gaethje a chance. I just don't think it has any chance to matter. And so that negates for me. But the rest of it, the style personality, the clash of personalities between Conor and Khabib, even throwing away the buildup, which obviously was sensational, you've got a humble but very aggressive shit talker in Khabib, and then the the definition of playing the dozens in the sport. I mean, everything about them was contrasting in the most interesting ways. And it was always the greatest fight to me building towards. Whenever that finally would happen, it would be the greatest moment in the sport. And then it was. And just because the fight itself didn't deliver, the fight itself is never designed to deliver. Khabib, by his nature, is never going to give you a fight of the year contender. He's going to beat the hell out of somebody. He'll give you a beatdown of the year contender, but he's never going to give you a fight of the year. And so this is kind of limited in that action. So I side with Aaron on this. I do think Khabib Connor is the greatest fight for basically everything other than the in-cage product.
I like that after you give me a point for creativity, he just goes and uses my exact answer.
Well, apparently
it's the opposite of creativity.
Apparently that's how you score points. You just repeat what someone who is arguably smarter than you says. But I
Fair enough. Fair enough. I don't have a rebuttal for that.
All right. Let me ask you this, Jed, because I mean, you just wax poetically about it, and you've often said on the show that you feel that Khabib is one of the greatest, maybe the greatest of all time in the sport. He's the greatest. And Justin Gaethje has that, you know, that crazy still in him, but it's a much more composed crazy. It's used more methodically instead of like every second of every round. Besides the undisputed title and the chance to be the one in 28-1, what is at stake for Gaethje? Like, if he were to do what a lot of people believe he will do on Saturday, what will that mean for Justin Gaethje in the grand scheme of things?
I mean, I don't think a lot's at stake for Gaethje in this. I think this is an all upside fight for him. I mean, obviously, if he does get the win, tremendous. It's going to launch him, you know, catapult him into the stratosphere of stardom and all these other things. If he loses, no one's going to knock him. He's still the most exciting fighter that's ever been in the sport. And I don't think that's up for debate. Honestly, I think that's pretty clear. If he wins, he gets a lot. If he loses, he doesn't lose much. So there's not a ton. There's not a ton being risked, but there's basically everything to gain. But I mean, he's just not going to win. So it doesn't matter. Like, we can talk about it like he's got a chance. He just doesn't. Like, he's going to get dump trucked.
What are your thoughts on that, Mr. Brownsetter?
I don't know if that's 100% fair to say. I mean, if you look at who Khabib's beaten, his resume isn't fantastic. He's beaten Conor McGregor's obviously a massive win. Conor McGregor, you can argue, is a top 10 mixed martial artist of all time. And then, of course, the win over Poirier. Look at how good Poirier's been. That's another good win. But leading up to that, his resume doesn't have much. You got Ally Aquinta. You got Michael Johnson. You got Abel Trujillo. Yeah, like there's a lot of decent names. But I think that a win over Gaethje would mean a lot for Khabib. And I also think that we do still have some questions to answer that maybe Justin Gaethje could pose. Like, if Justin Gaethje can stuff takedowns, nobody's been able to do it before. And I mean, like Jed said, this is a lot easier said than done. It's a maybe. Maybe he can stuff a takedown. And then
it's a no.
It might be a no. It might be a no. But I still think that Justin Gaethje has a better wrestling pedigree than anybody Khabib has fought before. But Abel Trujillo had a good wrestling pedigree and got dummied in that fight. So, I mean, who knows? Let's see. I'm interested to see. I think Gaethje is one of the most exciting fighters. I think Gaethje has as much power as anybody he's fought, maybe save for Connor. But I think that if you pair really good wrestling or defensive wrestling with the power, that's what everybody thinks is going to stifle Khabib. Again, everybody also thought that Tony Ferguson off his back would be able to sub Khabib. We've never got a chance to find out. But I do think that with Gaethje, it's going to be an interesting fight. I'm not as confident as Jed is that Khabib's going to absolutely truck through him. But in my mind, I'm leaning towards that being the outcome. I think that until we see otherwise, we kind of have to assume that Khabib is just going to roll through everybody. So I'm eager to see if Justin Gaethje can do otherwise. I would love to see it. I think that it would be refreshing to see somebody actually be able to hang with Khabib. Even if Gaethje wins 2 rounds out of 5, like, I still think that's a moral victory for him. But Gaethje could also knock him out. Who knows? It's MMA. Lots of crazy stuff happens all the time.
How does he win 2 rounds and not knock out Khabib?
Keeps it standing. I mean, Connor won a round and didn't knock out Khabib.
Yeah, I think Gaethje has a lot more power than Connor.
I don't know if that can be substantiated. How many 10-second knockouts does Gaethje have? Connor has like 3 on his resume.
Yeah, but Connor's not, like, those are kind of an anomalous for him. Like, Connor has really, like, that's frankly,
dude, he knocked out Jose Aldo in 13 seconds. Who had done anything to Jose Aldo before that? Like, yeah, because Jose Aldo been knocked down before that?
if you'd let me complete my statement here, the reason I am more interested in the X's and O's of the Connor matchup is because Connor, I mean, he has power. I'm not saying the man has pillows for fists, but he said it before several times. He's all about precision. His knockout for Aldo was running forward and he put one precisely on his jaw. And that seems to me to be a lot more of a possibility to catch Khabib than I think Gaethje like just has way more raw power than Connor. And so, but he's just way less likely to land it, and he can't stop the takedowns. If this was the NCAAs, great. That wrestling pedigree might matter. It is not. It is a cage fight, and he is a way less good athlete than Khabib Nurmagomedov, and he is going to get steamrolled. And that's just how it is for everybody in the division.
Certainly really? A possibility.
Yes,
a possibility. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I guess it's a we'll see, but I do think Gaethje poses unique challenges. That being said, until we see Khabib get challenged by anybody, it's hard to say, oh, this guy's going to be, this is the guy. This is the guy.
Way to take a firm stance, Aaron. I don't know, maybe.
Well, listen, this isn't a 100%. You can't go into an MMA fight and say 100% this guy's going to win. Maybe it happens. I don't know. I would say he's got a very large chance of it happening. And I think that, again, until I see somebody do something otherwise than Khabib, I'm going to just assume that he's going to be as dominant as he always has been. And he's still young. So let's see how it goes.
Really love this fight. Creates this kind of conversation. And again, I've never, of all the Khabib fights that I've talked about and asked friends about and asked fighters about, never heard it so one-sided for the challenger or for the guy fighting Khabib as I've heard it for Justin Gaethje. It's crazy. It's wild, but I can't wait to see what continues to happen in this matchup as the point for this round goes to Mr. Jed Meshew. He is on the board. I like it. I like what's going on here. This is fun. This is fun. As we're going to take an even deeper look at this card, Jed Meshew, UFC 254, obviously he's built around this title fight. There are some important matchups, some fun ones sprinkled throughout this card. So I am curious, outside of the main event, and there really is no wrong answer here, Jed. At least I don't think there is. And I shouldn't have said that because the last time I said that on this show, a panelist said that Kamaru Usman was the fighter of the year in 2020. But anyways, that was in the past. What is the storyline? What's the storyline that has caught or will have your attention come Saturday night outside of the main event?
What kind of an idiot would pick Kamaru Usman for Fighter of the Year? I hope that I don't work with that guy and collaborate with him on a literal weekly basis. That would be shameful if that were the case. So the correct answer is the co-main event. That's not that fun, and so I'm sorry to not come blazing with takes, but I imagine you'll give me an opportunity to dive a little deeper in the card later. But I mean, I think pretty obviously the most interesting storyline is Robert Whittaker and where he is. He has rebounded with a win from the Adesanya loss and potentially can get himself another crack at the title here with a win over Jared Cannonier. And on the other side of that, Cannonier has basically been handpicked by Israel, by the champion. If he can get through Robert Whittaker, he's going to be the next guy up. If that fight were to happen, that's a super interesting clash of styles. I mean, of course, I'm going to favor Adesanya there, but I think Jared Cannonier is at least an interesting guy, and his move to middleweight has just been spectacular, nothing short of it. And so I think this is, you know, I would say this is a more competitive and interesting fight than the main event, probably the most competitive and interesting fight on the card for me, because I think Robert Whittaker is a little over it. You know, I think he's probably the wars with Yoel Romero, the losses. He has two losses to Yoel. Let's just put that out there. But, you know, I think those two losses to Yoel took a lot out of his career.
I'd say one, but I got you.
Yeah. His two losses.
At least one. Okay.
Yeah, he's lost twice to the greatest fighter we've ever seen, not named Khabib, and that's okay. It happens to everybody. It happened to Adesanya as well. But, you know, those, he took so much damage in those fights. I do think that he's feeling the effects of that. And but, you know, we saw he's able to rebound. He still has plenty left in the tank, even if maybe he doesn't have the shine that he once did. And a huge step up for Jared Cannonier. Everything about that fight is super fascinating to me. You know, how powerful are the crystals? All of that. So give me the co-main event as far as the next best storyline.
What do you think, Aaron? Are you agreeing with the co-main event, or you got something else in mind?
Well, like Jed said, it's kind of a dumb question. There's only really one storyline that matters outside of this, outside of maybe you could argue, like, can Walt Harris bounce back and get back in the win column after, you know, obviously the tragic death of his daughter. Wasn't able to do it last time against Overeem. I'd like to see how he does against Volkov. I think that's a great matchup, but that's not really, from a storyline standpoint, I'm going to go with the co-main event, but I'm going to go in a bit of a different direction than Jed did. I don't think that it's about Robert Whittaker. I think it's about Jared Cannonier. You've got Israel Adesanya constantly for months saying that the dark horse of the division is Jared Cannonier. Well, let's see if he is. This is the number one contender in Robert Whittaker. And you've got Jared Cannonier, who's looked tremendous at middleweight, getting a crack at him. Let's see if he is the dark horse of the division, because I think a win over Whittaker will get him a title shot. I'm not confident that if Whittaker wins this fight, that you see Israel versus Whittaker again. I think Israel, there's a good chance he can move up to light heavyweight and face Jan Błachowicz. Think about it from a promotional standpoint. If Israel moves up, beats Jan Błachowicz and is now the light heavyweight champion after John Jones vacated the title, like, a Jones versus Izzy fight with Izzy as the light heavyweight champion is, like, that's bonkers. Like, that's,
and
that's
John gets to duck the legendary Polish power. It works for everybody.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that you could see him say, well, listen, I beat Robert Whittaker in the first round. I know that this is a big fight for Oceania, but right now, in terms of the status of the world, I'm not sure how long we're going to be until we start seeing stadium crowds again. I mean, I know they could probably do it in New Zealand given the low coronavirus cases, but are they going to send their crew down to quarantine in a hotel for 2 weeks in order to make that fight happen in a stadium? Who knows? But be that as it may, I think that we're looking at the wrong party in terms of the co-main event in the story. I think that the story is Jared Cannonier and him proving that he has what it takes to beat a Robert Whittaker and ascend to the next level of this division, because who's beaten Robert Whittaker outside of Israel Adesanya? And of course, arguably Yoel Romero. I'll say that I think Yoel won the second fight, and I think it was fairly clear. I thought that was a robbery. The first one I would give to Whittaker, but that neither here nor there. I do think that Cannonier is the story, not Whittaker.
No love for Casey Kenney trying to be a Hamzat Shamayeh part two, trying to get two wins on Fight Island.
Nathaniel Wood was on the same card as him. What do you got to say about Nathaniel Wood? Are you disrespecting Nathaniel Wood?
Well, listen, Nathaniel didn't win a fight 2 weeks ago on Fight Island, went home and came all the way back.
How many weeks ago did he win? He won on Fight Island, didn't he?
In July.
I thought he won on during this recent series, no?
Mm-mm.
Am I wrong on that? Okay.
Let's get
Casey to look into that.
Never be wrong.
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
That's impossible. Okay. Also, if you were looking for a more interesting, I'm not going to go and say that it was a bad question, because I'd never do that to you, Mike. I think you ask great questions. But if you wanted a question that can lead to some more interesting choices, you know me. I love the deep dive. And this isn't even that deep of a dive, but you can't tell me that Ty Tuivasa, Stefan Struve isn't going to be hilarious and fun. Like, when in doubt, heavyweight's always just amazing. And Stefan Struve, great personal story, the comeback. Ty Tuivasa hasn't won in like a decade, but he can punch really hard, and Stefan Struve still doesn't know how to be tall. It's just going to be calamitous fun, and I feel no shame for being really excited about that fight.
Yeah, see, if you would have asked what fight are you most excited for outside of the main event, I would have had a different answer than the co-main event. I want to see Iwan Kutelaba in that rematch against Ankalaev. I think that's an awesome fight. And I think those are two really strong fighters in that division. And I think Ankalaev has a good chance of being a champion in that division one day. So that would have been my answer. But, you know, you can go with whatever question you like, Mike. It's your show.
Hey, listen, and that's the beauty of this game.
It's a great show, Mike.
Yes, it's the beauty of this game, because you can take questions, you can interpret it however you'd like. If you want to, for most fun fight, or, you know, deep fight, like, however you want to see it. There's no wrong answers here, unless you say Kamaru Usman is the best fighter of 2020.
Yeah, that would be.
There are no wrong answers on this show.
I forgot Cowboy Oliveira is on this card too.
He's fun.
And that's going to be a good fight just in general, because Cowboy Oliveira is good at fighting, and this the Shavkat Rakhmonov, is that right? Did I pronounce that right?
Maybe.
Let's go with yeah. I want to say yeah. Undefeated prospect, so that's good. And I still maintain that Cowboy is the correct next fight for Hamzat Chimaev. I think that's the fight I'd like to see Hamzat take. So and I know Oliveira's asked for that. So if he can get a win here, get on the mic, maybe he can stir something up for a couple of weeks later down the line in Fight Island.
What do you believe, Aaron?
Week down the line in Fight Island. This is the last event on Fight Island in 2020.
Oh, well, see, now look, now I've been wrong about something, too.
We're even. Perfect.
Call it square.
I'll take it.
Okay. All right. So we asked this question about something earlier. I think we talked about it in regards to how the main event played out this past Saturday. So, Aaron, what is the best case scenario for the UFC in this co-main event? Like, you got Cannonier, who Adesanya, the middleweight champion of the world, has a ton of respect for. He's already pegged him as the next guy if he wins. Taking on Whitaker, who was the champ. We've already talked about this. Adesanya dominated him. He's coming off the loss to Till. Dana White said, well, you mean you should still make the argument for Whitaker, but it doesn't matter. I mean, really the way that most casual viewers, most people watch sport are looking at this fight is if Cannonier wins, he's going to fight Adesanya. If Whitaker wins, they're going to skip over all this. We're doing 205, whether it be Jones, whether it be Blachowicz, all depends on what happens on Saturday. So what is the best case scenario, a Cannonier win or a Whitaker win?
I think from a promotional standpoint, you've got to go with a Whitaker win because, as you mentioned, it opens up a Pandora's box. Because you now have Israel, who might say, I don't think I want to face Whitaker again, move up to 205, and then you can build towards that Jones fight. But I also think that if you do a Whitaker and Adesanya rematch, and you do it in Oceania at some point in time, like that's always going to be a big fight there. So if you're looking at promotional value, it's not just about, we've got a new challenger for the middleweight title. And I know that Israel's been building towards Cannonier being the dark horse of the division. But I think that from a dollars and cents perspective, if you're going to look at it that way, and from a promotional standpoint, I think the better scenario is if Whitaker wins in both cases. If he decides to face Whitaker again, and you do that in front of a big crowd, the numbers in terms of pay-per-view for Australia and Oceania have been off the charts when Israel's been fighting. In fact, in New Zealand, his last fight actually beat the fight with Whitaker in terms of buys in New Zealand. So I think that that's still a mega fight whenever it happens. And I don't think that Cannonier versus Israel is as much fun for the casual fan. Like, I don't think it's as intriguing of a fight. I do think that Israel's built towards that. I just don't think that from a promotional standpoint, strictly promotional, that that's the best case scenario.
Jed, what do you think?
I agree. The less interesting fight is definitely the guy we haven't seen, the champion. Absolutely.
Nobody said interesting. Promotional standpoint.
Yeah. Promotional standpoint.
Making money is the promotional standpoint. That's what you want to do as a promotion is make money. That's what their business is. Their business model is one that makes money.
How often do reruns outperform the original item? Like, it's just, that's just nonsense. Jared Cannonier, the best outcome. Jared Cannonier blows the doors off Bobby Knuckles, gets on the mic, talks some trash, kicks up a fight, and that happens.
I can explain to you when the rerun outdoes the original. I mean, you have the Australian audience, which is a big crowd, and they're not going to be as interested if it's not Whitaker in there. They won't be as many buys.
I don't think anyone's going to be that pumped about a Whitaker. It's a thing that you can do and won't be like miserable. It'll be fine, but everyone knows what happened in that fight, and that's just what it is. And frankly, I don't actually think Adesanya takes it. I do think he moves up to 205. But at that point, if we're just saying, well, he goes and takes the 205 belt, we're overlooking the legendary Polish power, and I will no longer ever underestimate Jan Blachowicz because he's knocked out too many people that I thought should have pistol whipped the man. So, look, champ is champ, and he gets to be champ, and I may pick Adesanya if that happened, but Jan Blachowicz has earned my respect, and I will not say, yeah, just let Izzy move up, take that belt, set up the John Jones fight.
I respect Jan.
It sounds like you just think he's holding the belt for Adesanya.
Answer this question for me, Jed. Answer this question for me. Yeah. If you were to do us a poll of every UFC fighter and say, who's the most beatable champion right now in the UFC? What do you think the number one answer to that question is going to be at any division?
I mean, I don't know.
No, you do know. You know the answer. You're just sitting on it.
Unclear.
You know the answer. It's 100% clear what the answer is. And it's no disrespect to Jan Blachowicz, but people think they can beat Jan Blachowicz. And that's because we haven't seen Jan Blachowicz defend the title.
I've been impressed by Jan.
And I think Jan is a great guy. I really like Jan. I think that he's a good role model and a good person to be the champion. But I also think that if you ask people around you, like if you ask the fighters and you did a poll and it was an anonymous poll and you said, who is the most beatable champion right now, that I think far and away it would be Jan.
Yeah, but like, what does that have to do with anything? Realistically, it doesn't.
It has to do exactly with what your argument was.
My argument is that we're overlooking Adesanya, and yours is, well, everybody's doing it, so it's okay.
Who said we're overlooking Adesanya?
We're overlooking Jan Blachowicz. Sorry, I misspoke. And yours is, well, everyone's doing it, so that's okay?
It is okay, yeah. That's the
How narrative. Does that make any sense at all?
If Jan Blachowicz ends up beating Israel, like, you've built this massive European star. Like, I think the UFC would love to see Jan beat Israel.
That's a star. I think you've built a slightly bigger star, but you've also just.
If he beats Israel?
You've built a slightly bigger star, but you've really just cratered your existing big star.
Yeah, that would be bad. But I mean, people have to lose. You know, like, eventually fighters will lose in the UFC, you know?
Yeah, I think you're counting a lot of chickens, and I think that it just makes
That's the purpose of this question, is to count the chickens. We're being asked to count the chickens here.
You're counting chickens like 6 years down the line. Like,
but that's what you got to say from a promotion.
I'm saying right now, the best thing that happens is very obviously Jared Cannonier beats the brakes off Bobby Knuckles and sets up a pretty good middleweight title fight.
Pretty good.
And after that, yeah, after that, Izzy's just going to go fight John Jones anyway. Like, he can do a good title fight or maybe a rematch with Robert Whittaker, maybe not a bunch of, and nobody's really
options.
Got pumped about
options
anything.
Are what promotions love. You don't like being written into a corner of your promotion. They need options. You want to monetize your stars.
Yeah, if I'm stepping up to the plate, I'm not looking for the hardest pitch to hit. Give me something down the middle to launch out into the stratosphere.
Yeah, that's the way Dana White thinks. He likes just easy matchups that are just going to that's the next rightful contender.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The final trip to Fight Island in 2020, creating a lot of discussion. That trip comes to a close on Saturday. This round closes with the point going to Jed Meshew. Jed Meshew, what a battle.
Never a doubt.
What a battle. I stewed on that for a little while as you guys are going back and forth. But you know what? There's no better way to close out regulation in a battle quite like this. And talking about Bellator. That's right. Bellator returned stateside this past Thursday night with Bellator 249 in absolutely picturesque Uncasville, Connecticut at Mohegan Sun Arena. Chris Cyborg runs through Arlene Blanco in the main event. First submission win of her career, retains her title in pretty easy fashion. They lose the co-main event and a couple of hours before the main card's about to start. A lot of wild and wacky stuff in the prelims. But the ratings were, at least on CBS Sports here in the United States and the overall listings, non-existent. You couldn't even see them. In fact, I looked at it this morning and I laughed a little bit because old reruns of The Cleveland Show, a high school football game, reruns of Ridiculous on MTV, all charted in the top 150 on Thursday night. Bellator did not.
And Jed says that the reruns are never as good as the original.
Cleveland Show. Reruns of The Cleveland Show beat Bellator, which is crazy. So let me ask you this, Jed, because we talked about this right after Scott Coker made the announcement, super early in the CBS Sports era. But since the big reveal has been made, they've had some events, they've had title fights, they've made a ton of really good prospect and free agency signings. Huge main event at next week's Bellator event between Musasi and Lima. How would you grade what we've seen from Bellator since Scott Coker had that presser and made all of these different announcements?
I feel so bad for Scott Coker because he is objectively good at his job. Like, he does all the right things. He makes the moves that make sense. He is a good promoter. By all accounts, seems like a good dude. Like, he's not trying to lock people into restrictive contracts or abuse his workforce or, you know, take advantage of them for personal gain or any of those other things that potentially other people in combat sports may do. And he just cannot win for losing. Like, everything that he's done, I think, has been good the last few months. I think the fights they've put together, the prospect signings, their committed effort to European MMA and hosting events there, going to Paris, putting on events in Milan and staying focused on Italy in that regard. Like, all of these are really great ideas and concepts. Letting Michael Chandler walk away, not trying to get into a bidding war and supporting him publicly and saying, hey, his time, his journey with us is done. When he's done doing what he needs to do, there's a spot for him to come back here. And maybe Michael Chandler will be the first inductee into the Bellator Hall of Fame. He does everything right, and he just can't get a damn bit of traction. And I don't know the answer, man. It's tough because the results are not there with the process, and it's been that way for him for quite some time, honestly, before Bellator, and we're just seeing it again. I don't know if it's just the environment. I don't know if people just aren't as interested in some of these things as the MMA media is pretty pro on, but something is not working from a ratings and a number standpoint, and that means that they're going to have to change things up. If they're not getting the traction with what they thought, they might have to go back into the spectacle side of things or be less built around prospect development. And while that's fun, don't get me wrong, when I get my time as the champion after the show, we're going to talk all about spectacle MMA, but it's not what Bellator has been lately, and it's not what I think we collectively want it to be. And so, again, I just feel bad for Scott Coker of Bellator because he's doing all the right stuff and it's not getting him the results that it should.
What do you think, Aaron? Like, is it just like time? Is it getting used to a new network, old habits, like waiting for the right fights? I mean, Chris Cyborg is a pretty big star for them, but it just doesn't seem to be translating in the ratings in the U.S. Like, what's going on here? What do you think how do you think they've been doing here?
The problem is the fights. Nobody's tuning into them because nobody's interested. They haven't built anything that is worth tuning into. The when the featherweight Grand Prix comes back, that is worth watching. I'm excited for that. The Nemkov knockout over Bader was that's a great highlight, and it's good. And they keep trying to push this narrative that they have the best light heavyweight division in mixed martial arts. Great, and sure, maybe you can argue that. I'm up. Somebody who would, but I just don't think that they're getting any traction because the fights aren't good. They've got James Gallagher fighting people nobody's heard of again. Michael Page is fighting people nobody's heard of again. There's no competition at all for Chris Cyborg. People talk about Kat Zingano. Kat Zingano just got into a decision with somebody nobody's heard of. We need to appeal to people by creating stars. And unfortunately, during the Coker era, they haven't been able to build any of their own stars. A lot of their great signings from before have fallen flat on their face. I mean, I think Antonio McKee Jr., I think, or AJ McKee, he's somebody who I think has a really bright future. I think Patchy Mix was a great signing and he's looked really good. But if you look at like Ed Ruth has fallen on his face. You look at Tyrell Fortune, he's fallen on his face. Aaron Pico has fallen on his face. I still think that there's hope for him. He's still very young. I just think that all of the moves that they've made that are supposed to push them forward end up being two steps backwards, and they just aren't building household names in the sport, and that's the big problem with Bellator. I would like to see them succeed. I think that the more competition, the better. But they lost arguably one of their top three names to the UFC like just recently. So how can you say the last 2 months have been good for them when one of their biggest names has left? And you look at the biggest stars in the sport, and a lot of them were built by Bjorn Rebney. You look at the Pitbull brothers. They're two of the biggest names. You look at a lot of the prospects that have had success. A lot of them were from the Bjorn Rebney era. So in the amount of time that Coker's had to turn the ship around, he hasn't been able to do that. And I don't think CBS Sports is the answer either. I don't even know if they have as big of a footprint as the Paramount Network. In Canada, I had people messaging me, where can I watch Bellator tonight? They don't know. Like, these are MMA fans that have no idea where to watch the events. We don't get CBS Sports Network. I think we might get CBS Sports Network here. I don't even know. You have to look it up. But people people want to watch the fights and they can't find them. Like, what's going on with this promotion where people aren't even able to consume their product? Like, I want to give them the benefit of that. I really want them to succeed. I think that they have a lot of really quality prospects. I think their signings lately have been awesome. Usman Nurmagomedov is supposed to be a big up-and-coming star. Magomedov is a big star as well. Like, he's the last guy to beat Piotr Jan. He's a good fighter. Like, they're making the right moves. But it seems like none of them are panning out. And they end up signing a lot of the UFC's fighters, and then those fighters don't end up having a lot of success. I mean, Bader, of course, is certainly one of the exceptions. But, you know, like, then they headlined with, like, Phil Davis versus Musasi. Like, do you expect that fight to be good? Like, when I saw that fight, I'm like, I'm not going to watch that. It's not going to be a good fight. Did you think that fight was going to be good? Did anybody think that fight was like, was anybody really jonesing for a Phil Davis and Lyoto Machida fight in 2020? And you're headlining cards with that?
No, nobody.
I mean, sometimes they're the worst enemy and they can't get out of their own way. They need to do something. And I think the tournaments that Rebny did that everybody was getting so sick of were better. They're better than these events. I hate to say it. The tournament format that they had was better. Everybody was like, oh, the tournament format is so tired now. And then they start doing all these regular events and everybody's like, it's not getting any steam. The Rebny era was better than the Coker era. I hate to say it. And nobody says it out loud, but it's true. And I think Scott Coker, like you said, Jed, is a good promoter. And the fighters really like him. He makes good signings. He makes all the right moves. But it hasn't gotten any momentum, and they need to work on that. They really do. You know, the fight I was most excited for this past weekend was Syed Awad versus Mandel Naylo. It ends with like a low blow in 2 minutes, and I'm like, it took all the air out of the room. I'm trying to enjoy the event, and like, I know what's going to happen in the Cyborg fight. So should I continue tuning in? Sure, I like watching a Cyborg fight. But did anybody think that she was going to lose that fight? Like, was there? If you would have polled 100 people that know anything about MMA, it was like, do you think that an Australian fighter with a boxing background is going to beat Chris Cyborg? It's like, no, I don't. So, I mean, I want to watch them and I want to watch the events and I like a lot of the stars that they're bringing up, but it seems like the Michael Page fights that are the most fun are the ones where he's picking on people that he shouldn't be in the cage with. James Gallagher, whenever he's met really high-level competitions, he loses or doesn't end up being a fight or the fight falls apart. Like, they just can't get out of their own way, and I don't know what they can do to turn it around, but they have to do something. Because, like you said, the ratings were non. You said they're non-existent. I don't even know. Do they track CBS Sports Channel in terms of ratings?
I don't know. I think so.
I don't know. But that's the thing. Like, there's not enough information out there for us to be able to make like a real, true observation about where they're at. And the UFC have been unsung heroes this year by what they've been able to do in the pandemic era. They wouldn't shut down. Bellator does shut down, and then they come back with like okay cards. I know we're saying this like less than 2 weeks before their biggest fight of the year, arguably, Musasi versus Lima. Like, I can't wait to watch that fight. I will be tuning into that fight. I'll find out where CBS Sports is in Canada, and I'll watch. It's on DAZN in Canada. But I'll watch that fight. I'll go out of my way to find that however I can. That's an awesome fight. And asking this question now is a little bit unfair because I think a lot of people are looking forward to that fight. But nothing's done it for me so far this year. Nothing. I'm sorry. Like, the Nemkov-Bader fight, I'll say, was good. Like, that I was a little bit excited about.
Archuleta Mix was good. That was a good.
Archuleta Mix was a good fight too. Archuleta Mix was a good fight. I'm a big fan of both those guys. They're both great fighters, and I think that both of them have a great future. So yeah, that's a good fight too, and I tuned into that one. But so if, the other so, fights, like, and then they do these international events. I'm like, I don't know. Like they do them live to tape. Like, still in the year 2020, they're like, I'm on Twitter and like people in Europe are like, oh, this guy just won. It's like, okay, well. No reason for me to watch tonight. Oh, here's the highlight. Okay, great. Cool. It's happening in real time, and they don't show it until later. On a digital platform. They don't show it till later. They don't show it live on a digital platform. Like, what are we doing here? And if they are, I don't know. I didn't know they were doing that now. They certainly weren't doing it last year when I was asking, saying, hey, is this going to be on DAZN when it's actually happening? They're like, no. But I'm like, but I'm paying. Like, I'm a subscriber to this service, and you're showing me stuff on tape delay. Like, in 2020. Like, it's in, like, is there an argument against this? Like, is there anybody who could be, well, I kind of get this. No, nobody gets it. Nobody gets it because it's a bird brain move. And I don't know if it's part of their rights deal, but it never should have been. And, like, I'm sorry. I'm running
so
out of gas
sorry
here.
But, for you, but, Aaron. Yeah. You have been wronged that you cannot watch the Costello Vanstinis Fabian Edwards fight.
I know.
That I know
I could
you
not watch that live.
Before, by the way, you derisively spoke about every other card they put on, saying that you won't watch it. So you're one of those people who I'm not going to watch it, but if you're not even going to give me the option to watch it, screw yourself. I should have the right to tell you I don't want to watch it.
If it's a good fight, I'll watch it. I will watch it. But if I already know the result, I'm not watching it. I'm not watching it if I know the result. If they did Lima versus Musasi in Europe, I wouldn't watch it if it was on tape delay. I would find out the result. Be like, just go on Twitter.
Obviously not. They sketch. Look. On at core concept, the tape delay is a dumb thing in 2020. Like, there's just not a real great argument. But it's harder for me to swallow that argument when you preface it by saying, "I wouldn't watch this garbage anyway." But oh, by the way, how offensive is it that I don't get to watch this?
Yeah, so, I would watch Michael Page if it was live. I would watch it. I did watch Michael Page. I think Michael Page is awesome. He's must-see TV, but let me watch it live. Why don't I have the option to watch it live in 2020?
I don't know. It just feels like there was a lot of, I took a tactic out of your book there and just let you ramble because it felt like you contradicted yourself about 17.
I didn't contradict myself about anything. What did I contradict myself about?
Well, they're not developing prospects, but they've signed a bunch of prospects.
Yeah, they haven't developed them. They signed them. And then the ones that they have signed, they haven't developed properly.
How do you not develop? It's Ed Ruth. They brought him along. He fought a bunch of people, and at some point, you have to win the fights.
Ed Ruth looked like a great prospect when they signed him. It was a big story. He was like a potential Olympian. He's got this crazy range.
What did Scott Coker do to screw up Ed Ruth?
I don't know. Ed Ruth could have fought better. I don't know. It just didn't work out. And same with Pico. They kept matching Pico out with guys that were better than – they didn't develop Pico. They should have done the Michael Page formula with Pico, but they didn't. They threw him in there with guys that beat him. I think Aaron Pico is so much fun to watch. I love watching Pico, and I'll watch all of his fights. But unless they're on tape delay, I'll watch all of his fights. But
man, you're just
I just think that they can't get out of their own way sometimes, and it's a problem.
Are you just against watching reruns? Because we know your opinion on reruns. You're very into them.
Yeah, I wouldn't watch it live and then watch it again at night, if that's what you're saying. I would not do that.
So they didn't air the MVP card on DAZN?
Not live. No, yeah, I think it was on Page Delay.
I was like, I watched the Page fight live, and I don't know why. It was on CBS Sports, but maybe that's why.
Yeah, I don't know. But it seems like that's been – I don't know if that one was live or not, but I just know that part of their formula has been showing these fights on tape delay for no reason.
Yeah.
You have a digital platform.
The Gallagher car was on YouTube. It was on their YouTube page, which people didn't even know about. They didn't even know.
They don't know about it. They don't know where to find it. Yeah. That's a problem. You need to get your messaging right. It seems easy. The UFC sends me an email. Hey, watch this tonight on whatever channel. Yes, sure. But I already know what channel it's on because it's always obvious.
I mean, listen. Yeah,
it's on ESPN.
Has anybody ever said, why can't I find this UFC car? Where am I supposed to watch this? They know. They know the answer to that question.
I have
when and where.
That statement before. That was years ago, mind you. But certainly, the fact of the matter is the UFC.
During the Fox, that was an issue. It was on FX.
Where is this?
It makes no sense.
This Fuel TV? It was no one ever had any idea.
Oh, God. Yeah. Fair enough. But they're past that right now. Yeah.
Yeah. They're just a massive corporation, and Bellator has good funding and backing, but
oh yeah, Viacom's a small corporation. Small potatoes, Viacom. Who's Viacom?
Let's not act like Bellator is top of the list on Viacom's concerns.
Yeah, but you're saying that their company has nothing. They don't have the resources.
No, they have good backing, but their company is still small. You can work for a company that is owned by a conglomerate or Fortune 500, and you're still left fairly autonomous. And, you have some benefits to that, but
they're part of the show. They're under the show sports umbrella now. They have resources. This isn't a fly-by-night regional promotion. And they've had many years to get it right.
Yeah, and their resources put them with CBS Sports, which is your issue here is largely with CBS Sports.
No, I don't know about CBS Sports. I don't know where to find CBS Sports.
Exactly.
So I'm in Canada. I don't know. And then people are messaging me I'm supposed to tell them where to watch Bellator in Canada. I'm not a TV guide.
Then
I have to go find out where to watch it so I can tell them.
They're not providing you a better viewing experience as Canada.
That's true, though, but who cares? They're not providing anybody a good experience if they're showing stuff on tape delay. Nobody wants to watch stuff on tape delay.
Man. That's true. They seem to have – they're at least trying to fix that problem. In the U.S., they fixed it.
Whenever I ask about it, they're like, oh, it's outside of our control. Why would you sign a deal where you can't show your own product live?
Because they get money. Is that too obvious of an answer?
Do they? It seems like now they're burying DAZN. They're distancing themselves from DAZN.
Well, they should have done that immediately. It's called DAZN.
I can't argue with you on that. I cannot argue with you on that. That one you win. I'll give you the point on that one.
Oh, he gave me the point. It's done. 3-1.
Just on that, just
on that one point, I'll give him a point.
Listen,
on that
how
one
can
point.
You not? How could you not give Aaron the point in this round?
Three, because he just gave me the point. It's a 3-1 victory. We're done.
He gave you a point inside the point.
The point inside the point. I gave you a fraction. You got like a decimal
you
point.
Like a tenth of a point.
This is like The Big Short. How does the overarching point not score if the one at the basis of it doesn't get there? The point inside the point goes here. The full point goes here. I'm victorious.
Well, Jed, you've got a whole new round to make up for it. So it's all good.
Yes, that whole rant was amazing.
I fight this last round under protest because I've already won.
Listen, I want Bellator to do well. Like, I'm not an anti-Bellator guy. I think that they have a decent product and some good up and coming talent. I just don't think they're doing it right, and I don't know what the answer to that is. But it seems like they can't get out of their own way sometimes.
I mean, obviously this card next week is pretty damn good. You got Musasi Lima for the title. That's a great fight. Nick Newell's back. Even Jake Hager is going to be on this card. Jack Swagger will be fighting, and then some good matchmaking with Jared Scoggins making his Bellator debut. He's going to fight Toby Misek. I mean, there's some good fights on this card. And if Musasi Lima doesn't end up on the top
that's
one,
that's a great fight.
Good card. I mean, that's
a good card. Ridiculous. But the last 2 months, they have there haven't been a lot of standout cards the last 2 months, and that's like I don't know why that is. They had a lot of time to put it together. Had months off.
Yeah, and then the Featherweight Grand Prix is coming up next. In a couple
good on them
weeks,
for getting to France first. I think that's a big move for them going into huge. Paris. I think that's good for them. So they do a couple things right here and there, but it just seems like the overall product has not grown for whatever reason.
Yeah, it's hard to put your finger on, but I mean, listen, I think Aaron said it best. We all want Bellator to do well. It's good for everybody. Aaron's going to get the point as we head to the knockout round. I can't freaking wait for this. What a shocking revelation. We never go to the knockout round on the show, but there is one question left. Each competitor is going to have 60 seconds to answer said question. They have no idea what I'm going to ask, but once they finish up, Casey Lydon, the judge, the jury, the executive producer, will render the final decision. So, Jed, you get the option here because you are a former winner. You are a former champion. Would you like to go first or would you like to go second?
I like the lead-in for judge, jury, and executive producer instead of executor.
What's he talking about?
I'm just buying time so you can have more time to prepare. I'll go ahead and take the lead. Why not? I can be done. I've already won. This can just bury him even further. I am the champion. So sure, let's. I've never actually gone first. So, well, let's do it.
Okay. It's funny enough because this day has just been bananas between trying to find guests and time switches and all that stuff that. Probably like 10 minutes before the show, I came up with the final question. I'm like, this is what we're going to do. And it turns out that Jed already partially answered the question. So we're going to add a little bit of a piece to it because we have let some time pass since his quick knockout win over one Gerald Meerschaert III. And we've seen a lot of matchmaking ideas, callouts, etc. So a two-part question, Jed, because I think everybody knows where we're going here. We're talking Khamzat Chimaev, ladies and gentlemen, who still doesn't have his next fight booked. And we talked about how brilliant the move was to double book him. And it turns out the whole thing was smoke and mirrors. So it was like a moot point to even talk about the double booking because the Damian Maia fight wasn't as done as originally laid out by Dana White. So the question is for you, Jed. It's a two-parter. How would we grade the UFC in this Chimaev booking and hype department now since the Meerschaert win? And at this point, after hearing him speak, seeing and hearing options, you want Cowboy Oliveira. Why Cowboy Oliveira for December 19th if all goes well this weekend? 60 seconds on the clock, and your time starts now.
So for grading the UFC, I still think they're doing a really good job with it, even if the Damian Maia fight didn't happen. The double booking thing has built this aura around Khamzat, which is pairing with what he's done to be this indestructible guy, and people are really interested into him. I think at this point, he's probably the fighter of the year. Maybe that changes, but I think booking-wise, they're doing okay. I want to see Cowboy Oliveira. I think that's the best fight that makes sense for him because Cowboy Oliveira is the kind of right test for development. What we know about Khamzat, I wrote about this actually the past weekend. We just know very little about Khamzat at this point. We know he can grapple and he punches hard and he's really good athletically, but we haven't actually seen him fight against a real test. And Alex Oliveira is going to athletically challenge him and not just be someone who gets rolled over. I'd like to see him take that step before he got really in there with the top 10. Top 15 opponent, and then after that, double book him for that. So do Alex Oliveira, and then Chris Weidman said he wanted it. Fine, Chris Weidman, you get the business next.
Okay, Jed Meshew has given his answer. Aaron Bronsetter, same question for you. 60 seconds on the clock. It is Shemayev Mania here in 2020, and it continues right now. Your time starts now.
I think they've handled it great because we're still wondering who he's going to face. Like, they keep teasing who it's going to be. Is it going to be Neil Magny? Is it going to be... Throw him in the deep end. Let's have him face Leon Edwards. They don't want to give Leon Edwards a title shot. And everybody thinks this guy is like a world beater in Shemayev. And that I spoke to a lot of odds makers, and they think that he would be favored over most of the welterweight and middleweight division. Let's fast track this guy. Leon Edwards doesn't want to fight anybody, it seems. Nobody wants to fight Leon Edwards because they don't think that there's any clout in fighting Leon Edwards. Let's chase some clout. Khamzat Chimaev versus Leon Edwards. Let's fast track this guy right to the top of the welterweight division. The way that he dominated those guys, I'm sold on this guy. I want to see him fight the best of the best already. I know that you don't want to fast track guys, and I talked about Pico earlier and all that. Leon Edwards, nobody wants to fight this guy. It seems like they don't want to push him to the championship level. Let's give him Chimaev, because if he beats Chimaev, now he beat this guy that everybody thought was going to be unbeatable. And if Chimaev beats him, he's right there in the mix for the title. And I think that they want to fast track this guy. They want to build a big name out of him. So that's my pick. I don't think it's going to happen. But if I had the book, Leon Edwards would be his opponent.
Jed, what would you like to say in response to this? Because you reacted in just a hilarious way right away. And I wonder why.
Because he said it himself. Aaron Pico, who knocked out Leandro Ego in spectacular fashion, but giving him Henry Corrales is a bridge too far, and we've ruined this spectacular prospect. Khamzat Chimaev has beaten nobody nearly as good as Leandro Ego, and we're going to give him Leon freaking Edwards? Have we
lost
our minds?
Let's do it. Fast track time. Fast track time. Let's go. Everybody's confident in this guy. Everybody says he's going to be a champion one day. Let's get the ball rolling.
A man who speaks out of both sides of his mouth deserves to have them permanently closed.
Let's get the ball rolling. Leon Edwards, baby. You want a good main event? Give him one of the top guys.
Leon Edwards has never produced a good main event either. What are we talking about?
Yeah, but now he would. Don't you think people would want to tune in to see what would happen in that fight? See if this guy's for real.
And Leon Edwards
smokes him. Now Leon Edwards is like, wow, he beat that guy that nobody thought that he was going to beat.
I don't think anyone cares about Leon Edwards for any
But they would after he beat Chimaev. If they hype up Chimaev and say, this guy's the next guy. This guy's the guy to beat.
Questionable at best. He's still Leon Edwards.
And Leon Edwards doesn't fight wrestlers ever. So now you got a good wrestler that's going to challenge him in that regard. I think it would be a fun fight. And I think people would tune in to see it.
Wow. I honestly, I mean, this whole game has been two differing opinions, and I love it so much. I want five more questions.
People are going to kill me for saying he's fighting Leon Edwards. Everybody thinks that this guy, he hasn't beaten anybody. Look at what he does in the cage. The guy's a monster. He's just an absolute beast. He's crushing people.
Pretty easy to be a monster.
And you talk about Pico. They're grabbing people from the regional scene for Pico to face. These are UFC fighters he's beating.
Right. Khamzat Chimaev is a monster because he dump trucked John Phillips, who put a phenomenal grappling display on against
John Phillips has a UFC win. And Gerald Meerschaert has the most submission wins in middleweight history. You heard of him? He's good. Good.
Gerald Meerschaert looked
that was
like
his step
he
up. That was the step up with Gerald Meerschaert. And how did he respond to that?
Gerald Meerschaert looked defeated instantaneously and then actually was defeated instantaneously. So it worked out really well.
Yeah, well, that was the test. Everybody said that was the big test. Let's see how he does against this guy. Pass the test with flying colors. So let's see it. Fast track the guy.
I'll tell you what. No matter how I feel or Jed feels or Aaron feels, it only comes down to the opinion of one man. And that man is the judge, E. Casey Lydon. And I know how Casey thinks about this whole situation, or at least how he did when this whole phenomenon started. So I am fascinated to hear who is going to come out victorious. So we turn it over to you, Casey. What do you think? You've heard the arguments. How do you rule?
Well, first of all, good day, gentlemen. I don't understand why we have a minute timer. Let's just put that out there.
Your rebuttals in this round as well.
I was in there for the minute, and everybody started asking questions.
Woo. You know, I made my decision at the minute point, but then at the 2 minute point, I kind of changed. And at the 3 minute point, I was like, a lot of good arguments here. So you're making me work overtime now?
It's a draw, isn't it?
Yeah.
The majority draw. The mustache picks somebody.
Oh, man. I feel like there was a groin shot in there somewhere. Could count.
All right. Your winner, Mr. Jed Meshew.
Oh, man.
That was the only rightful decision. I already won in regulation anyway, so that's how we get here.
This was the best. This was the overall pound-for-pound best matchup, maybe of all time.
Hey, guys, confetti is falling. Confetti's falling.
It's the two goats. It's the Khabib.
Oh, when Cowboy Oliveira loses this weekend, his answer's going to suck, so whatever.
Your answer is bad objectively anyway, so then I'd just be tying your
My answer is bad in the eyes of almost everybody, but I wholeheartedly believe he can give Leon Edwards a run.
Maybe. To steal your answer from way back. Maybe. We haven't seen anything to prove that, but maybe.
We haven't seen anything to prove otherwise.
That's very optimistic of you, Aaron. I'm just going to take a moment to shower in the confetti that's raining upon me, the victor.
Yeah, so while you're showering, you have 30 seconds to talk about whatever it is you want to talk about, good, bad, and different in the sport of MMA, maybe some Cam Soto, whatever you want to talk about.
Wow. It's like you know me, Mike. I will just leave and say, Casey, I wasn't going to reply. But then Mike asked me to reply, and I couldn't not say it. So thank you for not judging me against that. But, yeah, my time is devoted to Cam Soto. If you aren't aware, Cam Soto is the best thing that happens in MMA, and they have their next event. It is scheduled for November 14th. It is partnered with Fight Dojo or Full Metal Dojo, sorry. I don't know anything about what's going to go on this card, and frankly, none of us probably will for weeks to come. But whatever ends up happening will be amazing. I have spoken with the Fight Dojo guys, or the Full Metal Dojo guys, and they've got a lot of ideas on the cutting room floor from their first iteration, and maybe some of those will make in here. It's going to make you feel weird and a little bit icky inside, but it's also just the best time you can have watching fighting. So November 14th, Cam Soto comes back. Round three, baby!
Fight circus time. Aaron.
Casey now knows he made the wrong decision, but congratulations. Anyway.
Casey loved Fight Circus because it's the best.
I lost my mic for a second there. And there, I think we're back. Okay.
Your audio is still messed up.
He's laughing.
Oh, there you go. You're back.
Yeah, I was laughing so hard that I pulled the cord out of the damn microphone. This is such an amazing show. Aaron, any final words for the people? This is as close to a draw as you could have gotten here.
No, I got nothing. I'm still floored by the Cam Soto promotion. I don't really know what to say after that. There's nothing I could say really that would be better than that. I mean, that's just it's very odd, and now we all feel awkward. So congratulations to Jetta.
Who's had a better year, Cam Soto or Bellator?
Cam Soto,
I'll pick that up next on the next edition.
That's
a cliffhanger.
There's too much.
I am, when we do end of year things, I'm legitimately putting Fight Circus as in my event of the year. And Alex is going to too. And we're going to have enough to make somebody write about it.
So like you'll have that being in like second place over like in terms of aggregate than Bellator potentially. Maybe. Let's see. Fair. See how it goes.
Potentially. If this next event comes through, I'm going to do nothing but talk fights Cam Soto forever. Cam Soto is the best.
Cam Soto is
look what you've done, Casey.
Look what you've done.
Hey, there's a kid behind you.
Yes.
Hey.
Yeah, he's been bugging me. He's like, when can I come? So there he is. Now you're on. Confetti flying. Thank you very much, Grayson. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Jed. Thank you all for watching and listening. For Casey Lydon on the production side, the iconic voice of Esther Lynn leading us in. I am Mike Heck. We'll see you back once again next week on Between the Links. Enjoy UFC 254. Good night, everybody.
Love you guys.
This has been Between the Links with your host, Mike Heck. Brought to you by MMA Fighting, a production of Vox Media.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.